Welcome to the Jet Setting Family Travel Podcast. My name's Rod.
And I'm Jess.
And we want to give a big welcome to those of you that are listening for the first time. Just a little bit of information about us. We are a family of four. We, along with our two kids, Santi, 6 years old, and Nora, a three-year-old, have been traveling the world for the past year after selling all of our stuff and quitting our jobs.
And every time you say a year, it just sounds crazy to me because it feels like yesterday we set off on this adventure, scared and nervous and excited.
Yeah. And all of our social media, we get these like timeline things where, oh, here's what you posted a year ago today. And it's like, I can't believe it's already been a year. It's been more than 20 countries, 80 cities, 40 to 50 plus flights, and countless other methods of transportation. But we are still at it. And we are coming to you today from sunny Costa Rica.
Yes. Yeah, so we film our podcast on the go as we travel. We try to be as consistent as possible, but being on the road, there are times that gets a little tricky. Whether when we were in Patagonia, we just didn't have any upload, so there was no way to get the podcast out there. And then recently, we were supposed to upload last week, and our luggage with all of our equipment got lost. So we try our best to be consistent, but this is life, and I think traveling has really made our family more flexible and just kind of learn to roll with the punches.
Yeah. And today we are rolling with a very special episode that we want to dedicate to our experience in Machu Picchu. We get a lot of questions on what the trip to Machu Picchu is like because it is a very popular destination, but it's also not the easiest to get to. So today we wanted to cover how we got to Machu Picchu, what experiences we had in the Cusco and kind of Sacred Valley of Peru area, because frankly, Machu Picchu is probably a 1 to maybe 2 day experience. And there is so much more to do in that area of Peru that is absolutely worth it to do with kids. So we want to highlight not only Machu Picchu today, but all of those other experiences you can find in the neighboring towns and cities of the Sacred Valley of Peru.
And talk a little bit about altitude too, because I was really surprised when we started posting about Peru, how many emails we got asking about our kids in altitude. And we were really surprised too that on our flights both to and from Peru, there were we had one other child out of like 200 passengers. There weren't very many people traveling with kids. And we found it to be a very kid-friendly country. So I don't want the altitude to keep people away. I think we can definitely give tips about that, but it's not something that should hold you back from visiting.
Yeah. So with that, let's get started. Okay. So easiest way to get to that area would be probably to fly into Lima and then take a flight from Lima to Cusco. Cusco is the big kind of nearest airport that most people will take to get to Machu Picchu. So really the flight to Cusco, that landing is probably one of the most like dramatic entries we've had into an airport. You are surrounded by these mountains and these really like jagged elevations. You're making this really sharp turn to get into a final approach to land. And it was pretty much the coolest. I don't know if it was nerve-wracking. I was just excited. I was like, this looks really cool.
Yes, because Cusco is super high elevation. So Cusco sits at...
Yeah, it's at 11,000 feet in altitude.
Yes. So like the plane's already pretty high in the sky. And then it's just like all of a sudden there's this runway. I don't know. I just thought it was very unique out of all of our flying experiences. Mm-hmm. It was a very memorable landing. Cusco, like I said, sits really high, 11,000 feet. What is recommended and actually what we did do as far as helping with altitude is instead of just landing and staying in Cusco, we landed and directly took a cab straight to the Sacred Valley. The Sacred Valley, while still at high altitude, is much lower than Cusco. And so they say it's a great place, especially if you have kids or someone a little older, to let them acclimate to that altitude and then kind of hit Cusco up towards the end of the trip, because then, you know, you're kind of at a medium altitude. And then by the time you get to Cusco, your body can adjust much quicker than if you just land in Cusco and stay there immediately.
Yeah, and we're a family from Colorado, so we're used to 5,000, 6,000 feet of altitude. And once you get into that 11,000 feet, we thought we weren't going to be affected as much, but we felt it. And regardless of whether you stay in Cusco or you go straight into the Sacred Valley, we definitely recommend that you take at least a day to kind of rest and acclimate to that high altitude, because you are going to start feeling short-winded. You might be a little bit more fatigued. And there's a lot of hills that if you're going to be walking around town, whether that's in Cusco or the Sacred Valley, you're going to want to take it slow, because once you get to Machu Picchu, you're going to be trekking a little bit. It's a big walking experience, and you don't want to be having issues when you get to Machu Picchu, because you want to maximize your time there.
But Machu Picchu is lower elevation than both Cusco and the Sacred Valley.
So it's around 8,000 feet.
Yeah. As long as you're doing well in the Sacred Valley, which we honestly, besides getting out of breath hiking, like the only other side effect we noticed, and maybe it was just, I don't know, beds, or there was a huge festival going on when we went, which played a part in our sleep. But you can actually have something called altitude insomnia. So there's altitude sickness where you have nausea or headaches, but then there's altitude insomnia. And that is something I definitely felt. That was the only symptom I had, really, was the insomnia part. And so I would just take a Benadryl at night to help sleep. But if you have kids, maybe pack an extra melatonin or a Benadryl if you're okay with that. If you're not, just ignore my advice. But if you are the type who doesn't mind giving your children, that child, that little assist, you know, not regularly, but when they need it. That was the only side effect I noticed in both myself and the kids.
So getting to Machu Picchu itself. Machu Picchu is, there is
a
kind
of,
it is, yeah, it can get complicated, but the way that we did it and the way that we recommend it is to get to the city of Ollantaytambo first. So you will have to take a train to Aguascalientes, which is right outside Machu Picchu. Or if you want to do the entire Inca Trail, which is like a 5-day hiking experience, you know, you can walk pretty much from Ollantaytambo to Machu Picchu. But with us, with 3 and 6-year-old kids, we're going to take the train, because a 5-day hiking experience with our young kids is something that we didn't plan on doing, especially at high altitude.
So we stayed in Ollantaytambo for 3 nights. Ollantaytambo is really small. It's beautiful. It's cultural. It's picturesque. It's like cobblestone streets in the mountains with ruins. And I recommend spending some extra time there. But if you're short on time, I would stay, especially I would go from Cusco to Ollantaytambo, have one rest day, one explore day, and then hit up Machu Picchu your third day. And the train departs from Ollantaytambo. You'll hear a lot of people stay in another town called Urubamba. We decided to check out Urubamba just out of curiosity. I don't think it's as picturesque and cultural, and the train doesn't leave from there. So unless you're going to stay at a fancy resort that's in Urubamba, I would say stay in Ollantaytambo. It's a lot cuter. It's a lot more easy to get around with kids. And that is where your train is going to depart from to get to Aguascalientes, which is at the base of Machu Picchu.
Yeah. So just to give you a kind of timing of the entire experience, when you get to Cusco, it takes about an hour and a half to get from Cusco to Ollantaytambo. And then you are going to take a 1.5-hour train ride from Ollantaytambo to Aguascalientes. Once you get to Aguascalientes, which is pretty much just a tourist town that is propped up to support all of the tourism that goes to Machu Picchu, from there, you will have to get on a bus that will take you up the mountain into Machu Picchu in 30 minutes. So, you know, we did Machu Picchu as a day trip. So we left in the morning, we explored Machu Picchu in the afternoon, and we came back to Ollantaytambo at night. A lot of people, they get into Aguascalientes right outside Machu Picchu in the evening. They spend the night there, and then they head up into Machu Picchu in the morning. Some of them catch the sunrise. It's a very popular time to go. But regardless, you know, any option is a good one. You do have to purchase tickets in advance. There is a website where they have a limited amount of tickets for, you know, tourists to go into Machu Picchu every day. And now one of the things that has changed is that you have to select a time where you will have a 1-hour time window to arrive, where you will be allowed to enter the ruins. So
another thing to note is, unlike prior where you bought a ticket for the whole day, Now you buy a ticket for the allotted time, as Rod mentioned, and then you only have 4 hours at Machu Picchu. And that kind of is what dictated us to just do this day trip from Ollantaytambo and have that as our home base. Because since we knew we only had 4 hours there anyway, unless we wanted to buy 2 tickets for each of us, which would have been really pricey, we kind of figured we went up. I think our train left at like 9 a.m. And yep. then our entry to Machu Picchu was at 1. So we were able to ride the train, have lunch, get on the bus. We were at Machu Picchu from 1 to right 5:30. When it closed.
Yep.
5:30-ish. So I think we had to be out by 5. And then we went back down and took the train back.
7 p.m. we got back around. No, we took the train at 8 p.m. We got back at 10:30.
So it was a really long day. Had they not had the rule of you had 4 hours, I would have recommended you stay in Aguascalientes and really enjoyed the full day at Machu Picchu, but that's just not permitted anymore. And you actually also have to enter with a guide now.
Yeah, but one of the benefits of that is that it's not as crowded as it's been before. So they've controlled the amount of people that are entering on a given hour, and they control the amount of time that you take to get through the entire area. So then while you're there, it just seems, maybe it was just because we were there in the afternoon and most people go in the morning, but we didn't feel like it was crowded at all. And we were coming relatively in the shoulder season, but also getting into peak season, which is in July and August. So
crowds are definitely in the morning, though, because as we arrived at 1 p.m., like, we didn't wait for a bus. And you'll hear stories where people wait an hour for the bus. We didn't wait for our bus. But when we got to Machu Picchu, we walked in right away. But there was a long line for the bus going back. So it depends on what you want. If sunrise isn't the most dire important thing to you, for us, we just knew our kids would be really grumpy if we woke them up at like 3:34 in the morning to go do this trek. Mm-hmm. We opted for the 1 o'clock and it was empty when we were there pretty much. And there's pros and cons to how Machu Picchu has changed over the years. A part of me as a photographer wishes you still could enter and have 8 hours and have free rein and walk around. That's not how it's set up now. Now you have a time to enter and it's on almost like a circuit. You have to enter and walk.
Yeah, it's a one-way walk.
A one-way direction path that's laid out. And I think that's why they have the guide there. You're supposed to enter with a guide. So that was something that was just, we weren't aware of. So like when you enter Machu Picchu, most of the pictures you see on Instagram or wherever you might see for Machu Picchu are going to be in like the first section. So when you walk into the site, they're going to be those first 20 minutes.
Yeah, you're going to walk up a hill and you're going to get to this like ancient guardhouse. And from there, that guardhouse overlooks Machu Picchu, the complex itself. And that's where you'll see most of the pictures takes place. Most people will spend the majority of their time there because they're just waiting to get that perfect shot of them looking down on the ruins. And, you know, if that's how you want to spend your time, you're more than welcome to do so. But when you've got your guide with you, they're going to want to tell you about all of the history, all of the different meanings, all of the architecture and the way that that city was constructed. And I think that that is an also highly illuminating part of the experience. So just to compare, I think the biggest comparison for us between Machu Picchu and anywhere else was in Angkor Wat in Cambodia. We went to Angkor Wat without a guide and we just walked around and kind of just took in the different sites. But we didn't have a lot of the context, which we had to look it up afterward. So having a guide there to be able to tell you, oh, you know, this is, you know, this stone right here was used for ceremonial offerings. This was the guardhouse that looked over to, you know, protect the city from anybody that was, you know, coming into the area. And there's still a lot of confusion and theories about what that site was actually for. Many people thought that it was an actual
higher education
site where there were different professors and there were student homes and there were a lot of different temples there. So it was a big kind of mix between education, science, and religion. So it was really interesting to be seeing that kind of context while you're traveling and going through those areas rather than just walking through, getting a picture, and then leaving, and then looking it up afterward.
Something to note, which, I mean, I don't know how accurate it was, but our guide had said And he did seem really well informed and he was super knowledgeable. But he was saying that you can't just become a guide at Machu Picchu. They actually do like intense training and courses mm-hmm. and must pass exams in order to be eligible to be a guide there. So the people that are working there, I did find ours to be extremely insightful. I do wish like when sun started to set, I wish we could have like gone back to the picture spot to take better pictures. But that's just not an option. Like you enter one way and you leave another. And I'm glad that we didn't just sit at the top and enjoy that moment. We were only there for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes before we mm-hmm. moved on. But it's just something to note. Like it's not free reign like it used to be. They do it to preserve the site. And they've also set up these times and limits because they don't want it to be so overcrowded so that while you are there, you can enjoy your visit. So I see both sides, but it's just something to note. It's easy to do. Not easy. It was a long day, but it's attainable to do a day trip from Ollantaytambo and not have to move all of your belongings for a night.
Yeah. And one of the things that you should be prepared to do is spend the money that it takes to get there because to be honest, it is pricey. The train to get from Ollantaytambo to Aguas Calientes was about $400 round trip for the whole family. And that combined with the tickets, which for four of us was around $200.
And the kids were free.
And then the flights and the entire experience itself for that day will probably cost you close to $1,000. And that's not even mentioning the bus ride, which also costs like $60 for all of us. And the guide, which was $60 for, the 4 hour time frame that we were there. So just be prepared that it is going to take a hit on your wallet. But I think that it was worth it. I mean, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity for us. There's a lot of talk about a new airport that's being built in the Sacred Valley that will provide higher volume of access to tourists to get to Machu Picchu. So then there's a lot of people that are thinking that Machu Picchu itself is going to change with an added volume of tourists going to it. So right now is a really good time to go. There are still a lot of options for you to get there. One day, maybe we'll do that Inca Trail over 5 days to get the full experience. You know, Machu Picchu is not the only destination there. We've mentioned Ollantaytambo. There are ruins there that you can see as well. We ran into a festival there, which was a really enlightening and fun experience. It was like a 5-day festival where everyone in the community in that kind of Sacred Valley region comes into Ollantaytambo and the nearby city of Urubamba, which is half an hour away. And they all have their traditional dress. A lot of them wear masks. And there's probably like 20 or 30 different groups of people that come in and they get into the plaza. They each have their own kind of traveling band with trumpets and guitars and drums. And they have just this massive festival over that 5-day time period. It's called the Señor de Choquequilca. We'll put a link to
the name of that festival. Time of Pentecost. Mm-hmm. So it's typically after Easter.
Yep.
And we just got really lucky. We had no idea that it was going to be occurring while we were there. And the kids really loved it. We loved it until we didn't realize we were so excited day one for the festival. And then we didn't realize the festival's like 24 hours a day. So when you're staying and the music's going like 3, 4, 5 in the morning, after a few days, you're like ready for the festival to end to some degree, but we really enjoyed it.
Yeah, the music will start kind of repeating itself. I still have it in my head, the way that the beat goes. And then it just keeps on rotating.
It was never ending. We didn't spend as much time in Cusco as I probably would have liked. I did find personally, and I think it was also because we were there during this festival. So the streets were closed down. They were super packed. I found like the size of Cusco and the amount of things going on was a little overwhelming with kids. Mm-hmm. It just felt like they could easily get lost or like we just had to, you couldn't relax. There was just a lot of people out. And I felt that I'm glad we got to experience the festival in Ollantaytambo because it was small enough that they had free rein and they could kind of run around. And it was just way easier to manage for me personally.
Mm-hmm. Another activity that you can do and one thing that we did was we spent a day and a night in a nearby village. It's called Wiyuk. And we had this arranged through our whole village, an organization that sets up these educational and family-friendly kind of trips. So we went to Wiyuk, we stayed with a host family, and we learned about their culture. It is a very small village of less than 1,000 people, and they strictly adhere to Inca customs and traditions. So they all have traditional dress.
The women weave all of their clothing to this day. So like the women you see outside in all the yards, and they're either weaving items for their homes or their clothing, and they all still dress traditionally. So the people you will see in this town, and sometimes you will see the Wiyuk community in Ollantaytambo, and you can just tell who they are because
these
of
vibrant
how they dress.
Red colors. It's amazing. And we got to learn about how they weave their clothes. In the morning, the men head off into the farms to harvest their potatoes, and they go and still today barter with other nearby communities for corn and other kind of staple foods. They also tend to alpacas and llamas and cows and horses. And we also got to see one of their kind of ceremonial rites. It's an ancestral rite where they make an offering to Pachamama, which is their, you know, mother nature. So they make offerings of some of their daily items, and they hope to get, you know, good health and fortune for their entire community. So we were honored to be able to be a part of that experience. It's something that we won't forget. And the kids were still having fun. There were other kids there that they played with. There was a soccer field right there by the school, the one school in the community where Santi was able to go and play soccer with some of the kids that were just walking around. They joined in and they went into an impromptu soccer game. So,
and for that tour, they picked us up from Ollantaytambo, and it was about an hour.
Yeah, it's like 45 minutes to an hour to get from there.
To get there. So I feel like that was a really important part of our trip, in the sense that when we were in Lima first, which just to me personally felt like just another big city. Mm-hmm. Cusco, you see a lot of hustle and bustle. It really reminded us of Asia almost. It was like Asia meets Latin America. There's just a lot going on, and it's really cool to see. And you see street vendors, and I mean, it's just a really cool experience. It's different than like the average big city. Ollantaytambo is this really small town feel. And then Wiyuk is like a blast from the past. It's like going, stepping back into history, but really getting to know kind of, you know, maybe most of Peru doesn't live by these strict traditions anymore, but you can kind of see where their ancestors were from, or where like their grandparents still learn some of these values. So that's really cool to just kind of see the root and traditions of especially the Incas, but I'm sure it carries on throughout Peru, and how it's changed over the generations. So I feel like each place gave us a very unique experience and a very unique perspective on Peru. And then, of course, Machu Picchu, which is what most people go for.
Yeah, and there are so many more activities that we didn't get a chance to do. There is there's called the ruins of Moray. There's also the Salineras, which are like the salt mines in Peru. We actually, on our drive back from Ollantaytambo to Cusco, after going to Machu Picchu, we stopped by the small village of Chinchero, which is along the way, and we were able to see and learn all about alpaca wool weaving. So we got a kind of hands-on demonstration of how they prepare the alpaca wool, how they dye it into different colors, how they cure it, and then how they actually weave it into all these beautiful sweaters and shirts and blankets. And it was enlightening. It's a little bit touristy, where, you know, they have their shop set up for you to shop afterwards, where you kind of feel like you have to buy something from them.
Yeah. But it was beautiful to see how they dye all of their clothing and all of their items with things from nature. So yeah. It's not like they're using like food or like coloring or whatever.
Yeah, it's like, here's this bug. I'm going to squish it and it's going to give off this red dye, which now I'm going to soak into, you know, the alpaca wool, which is dipped in water. And you see this happening right in front of you, and you see those color changes. And
it was
amazing.
Like a weird chemistry class for the kids. As they like mix, they're like, we're going to boil this green leaf and then it's going to dye it. But then if you add this bug, the green becomes deeper. I don't know. It was really fascinating. And just to know that like all of this clothing they wear is coming from an animal, the alpaca, is dyed from things that they just find out in nature. It's, I don't know. I just told Rod, I'm like, man, the people that we met there so impressed me. I'm like, if they went on like, I mean, this sounds horrible, but not horrible, but if they were to go on like a Survivor show, it's like a Survivor is always like Americans. But if you picked some Peruvian person who like, they literally, they like are so connected with the land and the earth and they know what they can eat and how it works and teeth.
How to harvest leaves, how to harvest different things in nature for food and for shelter.
Like our host family, it was really cool. Like at dinner, he'd put this big plate of different, you know, not mint. It was probably, I guess for us, it'd be like mint. But he had all these different things.
Herbs.
And he would just walk at night before dinner and he'd pick all these different types of herbs, like just from his nightly walk. Yeah. And he just put them all on the table.
Put this into your tea. This one will help you with high altitude. This one will help you with circulation. Yeah. This one will help you to go to sleep at night.
But it was really just fun to see how much they respect the land and how much they utilize the land. And I feel like sometimes being in a different society in the United States where everything's just there and given to you, like it's easy to forget like the hard work and the process that goes into everything. You know, you don't really appreciate like the effort that went into your clothing or the effort that went in to get the meal that you bought at a restaurant. And so to be immersed and to see how these people really do it all was, I thought was really enlightening. And it's not like we don't know, but it's refreshing to like see it firsthand and like to remind yourself, like, you know, how much we take for granted, like the hard work that goes into everything. Like not many villages still make every item of clothing they wear from scratch.
Yeah. And
still,
it takes them up to 6 months for one kind of poncho and one hat.
Because the way it's woven, it was just insane. Yeah. It was just crazy. And so it's given me a really good appreciation for the way they live and just the way they utilize the land. Very eco-friendly.
So ultimately, we spent, I think it was 10 to 12 days in Peru. We spent some time in Cusco, some time in Ollantaytambo. We had that night in Huilloc. We did the day trip to Machu Picchu. We went to visit the city of Urubamba, which is half an hour in between Ollantaytambo and Cusco. And then we flew back to Lima. So if you're planning a trip to Peru, definitely, you know, Lima is just a big city. If you're limited on time, I think you can skip spending time in Lima. You can go directly into Cusco. You can go into Ollantaytambo and Machu Picchu.
I mean, Lima was pretty.
Yeah, it is. And it's a beautiful city, but it's, I don't think that it's worth spending 2 days there if you could spend those 2 days in the Sacred Valley. So
I'll agree with that. Although, unless you're a foodie, Lima supposedly is one of like the food capitals of the world right now. We're just not foodies.
Yeah, there's another destination in Lima called Arequipa. We didn't go there, but we hear that it's also highly recommended. There's also the
painted...
Yeah, it's the Rainbow Mountain there. It's about an hour and a half somewhere along the from Cusco that you can go visit. It's very high in altitude. I think you're trekking at around 14,000 to 15,000 feet at that point. But it's a big Instagram location, so you can go check that out as well.
I hope that we were able to give you guys a lot more information on Machu Picchu. We loved our experience in Peru. We're really glad we did it. I do think the one thing we weren't prepared for, because we didn't research it enough prior to going, was the sticker price and how expensive it was to get to Machu Picchu. I do think, though, thankfully, we enjoyed each step of the process from Cusco to Ollantaytambo to getting to Machu Picchu. So it's not like it was lost in time. We enjoyed the journey to get there, but it was definitely, it was not like Angkor Wat where it's right by Siem Reap and it's super affordable to get to. I mean, it was, you know, you had to take different modes of transportation, like Rod said, and each one had a cost. So it adds up quickly. But it was magical. It was beautiful. And we are really grateful we got to have the experience we did.
Yeah. And if you're feeling intimidated by the trip itself, there's plenty of travel agencies out there that will plan the entire itinerary for you, those 10 days, you know, and they will give you that day by day itinerary. We did most of it. We planned it all on our own, with the exception of the trip to Huilloc, which we did through the service from Our Whole Village. We will link their website on the show notes if you're interested about using them to get that kind of day experience into WeYook. But aside from that, everything else that we plan on our own, we stayed at Airbnbs both in Cusco and in Ollantaytambo. And if you were to stay in Aguascalientes to get ready for Machu Picchu, there's plenty of hostels, there's hotels, and there's Airbnbs there as well. So with that, that wraps up our episode all about Machu Picchu, all about Peru.
So we have a couple really exciting interviews coming up here on the Jet Setting Family Travel Podcast that we can't wait to share with you guys. So we hope that you tune in next time.
Yeah, in the meantime, we'll be continuing our adventures in Costa Rica. We're here settled in for about a month, so we hope to get a really in-depth immersion into all things Costa Rica. That is an episode that we will have in the future once we have enough information to share with all of you. But if you're listening the whole way through, we want to say thank you. Thank you for all of the feedback. And if you have any questions at all at any time, feel free to reach out to us on social media. We're on Instagram at the Jet Setting Family, or you can email us at hello@thejetsettingfamily.com. So thanks again for listening. And until next time,
happy jet setting.
The Podglomerate. A sonic universe.